invite your attention to the 5th chapter of 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 5. We'll begin reading with verse 3. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 3. Honor widows who are really widows. King James says widows indeed. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and repay their parents. This is good and acceptable before God. Now she who is really a widow and left alone trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. Notice how immediately supplications and prayers follows trust in God. Here is a widow, and she's really a widow. She trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. These things command that they may be blameless. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever, an infidel, atheist. Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. But refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some have already turned aside after Satan. If any believing man or woman has widows, woman have widows? Yes. Let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are really widows. We're going to continue the second part of the message that we began last Sunday on the church family. The church family. Now, there are changed and different circumstances that render a letter and strict compliance with much of what is written here impossible or impractical. We need to be very, very careful when we say, well, now this related only to that time then when this was written, and it doesn't apply to us today. We need to be very, very careful when we say something like that. There are some things that are timeless. Things change, but the Word of God and principles do not change, but outward circumstances do change. But if we tried to find some way to apply strictly to the letter everything that is said right here, we would have a heap of problems. And I want to demonstrate that to you in just a little bit. But first of all, let me point out to you some of the things that have changed, that will change in some degree the letter or the strict compliance of what is admonished and what is said, what is commented upon here today. A little later on, we want to get into the substance of the message, but I just want to show you why we're going to have to approach this on a principle basis rather than on a strict compliance basis. First of all, there is the status of women in society today. I want you to know there's a vast, vast difference on the status of women in society. Most of this is about women. It is. But it has in principle going beyond in the church family just widows, although that's the principal focus here. In the women in society at that time, there was almost no employment opportunities. Woman lost her husband, she lost her means of support, she lost her livelihood. There was almost no recourse for her. She was at the mercy of society. Nobody hired her. She might be able to sell herself as a slave to someone. Very few employment opportunities at all. That's one reason why widows were such a problem at that particular time. And single women, unmarried women at home, they have a job. Today, it's easier for a woman to get a job than it is a man. He's a little dark in complexion, that helps some too. But so we don't have that urgency there as we have here. And beyond that also, you have today what you did not have in that time, public retirement provisions by government. You're taxed for that, to make provisions for some of these needy. Survivor and welfare benefits that widows or people who are incapacitated automatically receive, that the whole society pays for. And so that burden there, or that urgency there for these provisions, is not as severe. And also, you have something today that I do not think we've had before, a great number of women who do not have husbands, not because they have been widowed, but because they have been deserted or divorced. Many of them have children, some of them never been married. Great multitudes of that. That's, as far as I know, that sort of thing has never existed before. So you see, you have societal changes. People come into the church and become part of the church out of that society, and it affects us in some way. Not in the spiritual principle, but in the letter of what must be done to rectify and to care for the disparity that's there among our families. Then you have this passage from verses 9 through 15, those widows taken into the number, or those enrolled. Anybody want to expound that passage for me? That is a dandy. I have known churches who have tried to use that to apply it to all widows, in fact, all single women, who they pretty well took the position that single women or women should not work in any extent, and therefore they weren't married, then it was there for the church to support them. And it really becomes ridiculous when you try to apply what we have here. Now, there's a couple of things that the two things that are generally tried to interpret what's spoken of, those women taken into the number, none of them could be under 60 years of age. That's a very definite cutoff figure there. What does that mean? What does 60 years of age mean? Well, we wouldn't know unless we knew much about what was going on in society at that particular time and how definitive that cutoff time for 60 meant. Many times, it was thought that 60 years of age was the time that a man or a woman became mature enough to really give themselves to spiritual things. I mean, you weren't really fit to serve the Lord very much until you got to be 60 years old. That was the sort of thing that was there, that anyone else under that age was unreliable. Well, first of all, a couple of things that those that are generally trying to apply to this cannot be. It cannot mean that those who are taken in, or those accepted, or those numbered, that he's not talking about those who should be considered saved, or church members. Now, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, you ladies, girls, you just can't be a member of the church until you get to be 60. Why? Well, you might, you know, get wanton against Christ and get walking around and gossiping and be idle and busybody, and you'd bring a shame on the church, and besides, you liable to sin and backslide. Well, we have to remember that young women have no corner on sin and apostasy. I think that's possible for any sex at any age. So he's not talking about being enrolled or being a member of the church or being considered saved. Can't be that. The second possibility that folks bat around saying, well, these are the widows who will be supported by the church. The church will support these widows and none other than those who are 60 years old and meet this requirement. Well, in the first place, that cannot be it, because what is said about what qualifies them under this passage also disqualifies them under the other. In order for her to be qualified, she has to be one who has brought up children. Well, the other passage says, if you've got children, the children's supposed to take care of her. Also, it's a woman who has means. She's not desolate. How do you know she has means? Well, she's been hospitable. She's fed. She's brought up children. She's nursed. She's washed the saints' feet. She has means to help people with and has used that means, employed that means in doing things. She's not a desolate person. She's a person who has means and has been very active in this. And so it cannot mean that. Also, so far as restricting this just simply to young widows have needs also. What are they going to do, starve until they get to be 60? They have just as much need as the older ones. I think they eat just as much, sometimes a little bit more than older folks do. Also, gossiping and gadding about is not a vice strictly for young women. Old women gossip too and bear tales. And so you see, it cannot be that. So what is this? What is this number that are enrolled, that are restricted to being aged, and a track record of this, these good works? Well, the only answer is, he's talking about the WMU. Now, those of you who haven't had your sojourn among Southern Baptists, that's a women's missionary unit. As Brother Dr. Campbell says, that old blue-haired WMU lady. Now, I've been a little bit facetious about that, but that's pretty close to the truth. And I understand and I know and I can well sympathize with the contempt that some women's auxiliaries have come under among churches. But this is precisely, and it is the only plausible answer for what we have in view here. At that time, these displaced women, who had not only no income, but they also had no responsibilities that they had to look after for themselves, were a wonderful and a marvelous source, human resource, we might say, to be employed by the church for special ministry. Now, there's no place in the Bible I can look up and prove to you what this was and show you exactly what they were doing. But it is the only answer, the only plausible, understandable, sensible answer that he's given. The church he was writing to well understood what he was talking about. They had this great pool of people who were capable and qualified for some godly functions and ministry, and those, it was those particular ones he was talking about that were to be jealously guarded and qualified for this particular group of people. Now, having said that, we want to get into the general principles that are set forth in this passage concerning the church family. There are three. And here's the first one. The first principle that is taught in these passages. Number one, the church has a role. It has a function. It has a responsibility and a privilege in looking out for the material needs of its family. I don't have to tell you that. That's not something new to you. But it's set forth as a biblical fact here. Widows, at that time, in that day, were the most prominent, needy group of people. We have those mentioned often in the Old Testament. How the Lord sent the prophet to a widow. And here is a widow that was given as an illustration, and the Lord's reference to them. He cast aside the Pharisees and the rulers of the synagogue for devouring widows' houses, for cheating widows. He used widows, poor widows, as an example and teaching some of his parables. And they brought up often. They were very prominent and very visible group of needy, vulnerable, helpless people. We have James' reference. What did he say? Pure religion. What is pure religion? Well, two parts of it. One has Godward, keep himself unspotted from the world, live holy. The other part of it, live graciously, lovingly, to minister to the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. Here's the group of needy people. And it's very evident in the Christian church. First problem they had was concerned this matter of the church looking out for the material needs of its families. Those seven men first appointed in the sixth chapter of Acts were appointed because the Grecian widows were grumbling, or the Grecians were grumbling because their widows were being overlooked in the daily ministration. This is something that the church was doing every day. It'd be kind of hard for us to identify ourselves and compare ourselves to where the church was functioning at that particular time. One of the things it did every day was the bread wagon went out. They went out every day to see that everybody had enough to eat and had their needs met, had clothes, had a place to live. This was an immediate function of the church, of the living God at that particular time. So you see how big a thing this was at that particular time. It still has that. That is an unchanging principle. Now concerning those who will be recipients and beneficiaries of a material help from the church, whether it be financial, whether it be needs or really substances given to them, or physical help or protection or whatever it might be, that recipient of that material help from the church, the person who got help from the church must be a real widow. A widow indeed. That is, a person who is shown up desolate, in real trouble, not merely inconvenienced. Now, you and I in this country don't run across too many real needy people. If I were to describe to you the circumstances that I grew up under, you would say, you would shirk back in horror. I took some folks over recently to the place where I was raised, and I pointed out an old tumble-down log barn out there, and I said, we lived in that barn. Dirt floors. Kitchen was a horse stall. We slept in that crib with the cracks all through it. And we burned pine straw and cow manure to keep the mosquitoes off of us while we could sleep a little bit at night. We lived in that barn until we got the other house built. People would say, this is horrible poverty. We never considered ourselves poor. We had something to eat. But I said that to illustrate that we don't have too much perception of what really needed or being really desolate is today. But this caution is set forth, that those that the church helps must be really needy. Once again, we have to be very, very generous and general in this sort of thing. We can't get strict and letter strict and say, well, just cut off thought, well, this is the poverty level. You got so many people and so much income. No, you can't do that. And the second is, the beneficiary of Christian charity of the church must be godly. Very specific about that in verse 5. Now she, who is really a widow, she's desolate, she's left alone, she's got nobody. She doesn't have relatives to help her. She trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. This is a godly person, one who is devout, unquestionably a Christian, a lover of God. Praise. Continues in supplications night and day. That's always the test of godliness. Your relationship and your communication with God, and to whom you make your petitions, and from whom comes your expectations. She is one who is living a Christian life. I'm talking about those whom the church is to look after. It's not the world. It's not every poor and needy person. It undertakes to support and supply the needs of such persons. Then he goes on down and says, now she's a widow, here's a widow, but if she's a pleasure chaser, and she's living for the world, having a good time living, I'm glad that old man dead. I'm glad got rid of that millstone. I can have a good time now. Got these ready kids too, right? I have them hanging around my neck. She's living it up since she did what she lived. She don't know anything about life. These are people who are living the Christian life. Well, we say now, well, Brother Merle, does that mean that you, somebody's hungry, somebody is in a state of need, and they ask you for some help? You say, well, you saved? Come on, let me hear your experience of grace. You a good church member? You pray regularly? No. The church may and should give emergency help to any needy person at all. The Bible tells you that. It says you shall open your hand to the poor wide, and you won't do it begrudgingly. But the church is not to undertake the support of ungodly people who have no interest in the Lord Jesus Christ in the first place. It would never have the resources to do such a thing. In the second place, if it did give all of its time and resources to that, it would be diverted from its mission of preaching the gospel. And that's what the world would like the church to do. This is what the worldly apostate church does. It works for world peace, disarmament, feeding hungry children, blah, 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 so on, but it has no gospel to preach. And so the extent of the church's obligation for maintaining and supporting needy people is confined to those who are really needy and are really godly people. Now, that's a good principle there. That's there. And so that's the first principle that's set forth for us here. Here's the second one. Oh, this is going to be a little shocking. This is going to sound a little radical. But it is only shocking and radical because to the extent that we have been brainwashed to accepting the world's substitute and displacement of God's principles concerning what we're about to say right now. And I'm not thinking about anybody in particular. In fact, I have tried to put out of my mind members and families of the church and folks that I know as I think about this thing, that I mind not be turned from what is said here. And certainly, there is nothing judgmental. And if you find yourself living and experiencing contrary to what is said here, please understand I'm not trying to put you down for that. I'm simply trying to set forth the biblical truth. To what extent we may receive it and apply it in our own lives, may God help us do so. Here it is. The biblical principle is that there should be a, and I use the indefinite article, singular, indefinite article, a provider for every family, a breadwinner. Now, I am not saying that it is unbiblical or unspiritual for there to be more than one provider or one breadwinner for a family, but the biblical order, that which God ordained, is there be a provider, a breadwinner. If any provide not for his own, if any provide not for his household. Now, this is objected to a particular person who is under the mandate of God to be that home's provider. A provider. There are enormous social and economic problems created by the ignoring of this godly order. Let me just mention a few of them. Equal employment opportunities. EEO or OEE. Is that what that is? Oh, what a mess that is. That anybody, regardless of their gender, their capabilities, their physiological, their psychological, their marital status, ever, whatever, their sexual orientation, whatever, must be considered equally on the basis for any job that they apply for. Also, the fact of the diminution of opportunities for people to be employed whom God really ought to be employed by the idea that everybody ought to be employed at any time they want to be. Child care problems. What a big mess that is. How many millions of kids come in from school and nobody there? Latchkey kids, the door's locked. There's no one there for them. Little babies, children have to be cared for. Who gonna care for them? Mom and daddy both working, grandma and grandpa's in a nursing home. And there's nobody home at the neighbor's either. They're both working. In fact, there's nobody left to keep the store. It's empty. So we've got an enormous child care problem. Care of the elderly, nursing homes. All of these are problems, social problems, created by ignoring this simple principles. Home maintenance. Taking care of the house. Keeping it clean. Keeping it fixed. Keeping it maintained. Keeping it up. Why do you know who's going to do it? Everybody's out working. Nobody home to look after the house. Community needs. Civil service and government services for which there would be no need of if they would all be immediately taken care of if every family had a provider. Just one. Now, once again, I said, it is not unbiblical for there to be more than one, but this is the biblical principle, somebody to provide for the household. That's the principle. Not only that, but there are spiritual problems in the family itself by ignoring this. Church attendance is one. Everybody gone all week. Some work in different shifts. Never see each other at the weekend. Well, we've got to have some time to clean the house and have some time with the kids and so forth. We, we can't give that to them. We go to church. It suffers from that. I just touched it there. That's the reason you can't have a series of protracted meetings anymore. That's it. Everybody's so busy. I mean, everybody busy. And then they come home, nothing's done, everybody can be taken care of. We can't do that. We can't go to church. We can't worship. We can't do that. We've got to do everything when we get home. There are the matter of family time together, of godly moms in the home. Now, I'm going to depart from the conventional wisdom of all the social reformer pundits today and say that it is not necessarily the absence of a man in the house that has contributed to so many juvenile children, wild, reckless, devils of kids. Many times a man, there's no mom in the home because there's not a man there. But the big problem is there is no godly mom in the home. Not just a mom, but a godly mom in the home. Mamas have a greater, more profound, more deep, more lasting influence on the spirituality of children, and that is due. I have to confess to you now that my daddy was not my buddy. He's my daddy. I didn't want him for my buddy. I had other buddies. But he was daddy. And that's what I wanted him to be. He was an authority figure in the home. But there was somebody there for us all the time. And that somebody that was there with us all the time loved God and spoke of God and walked with God. And she cared for us. The absence of a godly mom in the home. Such a terrible, terrible desolation of the spiritual influence on children. Disrespect of fathers. Father loses his status as the breadwinner, as the provider, as the necessary one in this household. Who is that guy? He contributes nothing. Mama gets the welfare check. Mama works. Mama brings the things home. In fact, she got a better job than he does. Who is he? Well, he's somebody who sleeps with mama. The disrespect, the loss of that authority figure. There's where the problem comes there. And that's a matter of dependence upon one another. And faith in one another and caring for one another. And that brings up this second part of our consideration here, the biblical principle of a provider, a breadwinner. Let me say this. Contrary to conventional wisdom today, not all should be commercially employed. Not everyone. See, the idea is now that everybody ought to be educated, brainwashed, and trained to compete for money and power. Well, shouldn't they? I mean, shouldn't every child have a right to a higher education to where that person will never have to depend upon somebody else for their livelihood? How often have you heard that? Make sure you never get yourself in a position to where you'd have to depend upon somebody else for your livelihood. That sounds good, doesn't it? Don't ever get in the fix, you know, that you have to depend on somebody else. You independent. You have this power. You have this means. You have a right. And everybody ought to be commercially employed. Moneymakers. Well, that has come upon us so subtly. We've swallowed the thing. We see ourselves captured in this jungle, in this mess that we have, and we don't even remember when we swallowed that lie, that error. Well, what's a person going to do? I mean, what's a widow going to do? What's a person going to do? What a woman going to do if her husband leaves her? What's going to do if she has to get out of it herself to keep from getting beat to death? And she don't know how to make a living. What's she going to do? Well, what happened to God? Huh? What happened to faith? What happened to dependence? Oh, we are independent. Don't you remember? We made that declaration years ago. We declared our independence. We're going to be independent from now on. No, no, dear friend. Don't ever think you're going to get things fixed to where you don't ever have to trust God. The quicker you find out, you're going to have to trust Him every day for everything. Better off you're going to be. You're making a difference if you married a millionaire. You're still going to have to trust God. Our help comes from Him. Brother Denny was right a while ago when he said David had got the right principle. It doesn't make any difference. Bear, lion, Philistine. God makes the difference in everything. You see how this is ruled and shoved out God and the need for faith and dependence and trust in Him. Also the need to trust in one another. I need you. I find it kind of hard to swallow old pride and say, yeah, I really do need you. Well, you ought to be in very well. Bug off. I don't need you. I don't need anybody by myself. I'm a survivor. I don't get along. No, we're talking about the church family. We need one another. This is rule that out. Now let me demonstrate why. This is so reasonable. God's principle. There should be a breadwinner, a provider. There is much which needs to be done in the home, in the community, and in the church, other than earning money. We've already pointed that out. Everybody's out with a job. What happens to the church? What happens to the home? What happens to the community? Well, let the government do it. Or just let it go. It's done. Much needs to be done. I mean, there are lots to be done. Worthy vocations, your life, to give your life's work to others and making some money. Some people, if you haven't noticed it, some people are wonderfully, and some are exclusively, they and they alone suited for other tasks and objections. Have you noticed that nobody but women can get pregnant and have babies? And nobody can do that. I know that that's something that infuriates some segments of society. But that's exactly the way it is. God fixed it that way. No one but women can do that. And He has wonderfully provided it that for 9 months, that baby lying there in his mother's womb and listening to his mama and listening to her heartbeat is where he knows who to trust. He knows where to be comfortable, where to be secure, where in his mama's arms. He hears his daddy's voice every once in a while. then he will continue hearing his daddy's voice every once in a while. And that's the way it ought to be every once in a while. But his mama is suited to raise him. Excuse me, folks. This is what the Lord ordained. Childbearing, child care, and household management. A woman is better suited to manage a household than a man is. I found that out myself. I don't like it. Not necessarily because it's hard to work. I just don't fit in it any better. I'd rather go out and get the sawbriers rake up my face. And it's not a matter that I hate washing dishes or making beds or things like that. Don't you know that men go out on jobs, they do things far more drudgery than that? But women are suited for those things. Curtains, decorations, little things around in the house that makes a house a good place to live. Rather than just a shed for the roof on it. Women do that. They're suited for that. Only they can do it, and they do it better. I know this isn't politically correct, but it's the truth. Some are poorly suited for commercial purposes. Not everyone is employable. And some who are employable are marginally employable. They're just not good employees. Employers, of course, can't select people upon their merits, upon what they can do. They have to select upon the fact of what the government mandates. But some people are marginally, some people cannot. Some are incapable. Some are handicapped. Some are disabled. Some sick. Some injured. And all of us, folks, will one day be disabled and no longer employable. Who's going to take care of you then? Who's going to look after you? Well, the Lord didn't wait on homes and Medicare and Medicaid and all of that. He had a provision for it in his family there when he says the provider. There's a provider. Even when the provider can no longer provide, there will be a provider for the provider. Can no longer provide. The provider, this provider I'm talking about, first shows piety. You know what I mean by piety? Being godly. He first demonstrates his godliness, the purity of his religion, his righteousness, his holiness. He first demonstrates that by providing for his own. Let them first learn piety at home. Our Lord's command that we forsake our loved ones for him does not exempt us from this, our first demonstration of godliness. There are preachers, would-be preachers, who have done this. You know, I can't be bothered with trying to earn a living for my wife and family. God's called me to preach. You know, I'm going to just turn my back on my wife and my children, my loved ones for Jesus. I'm going to serve Jesus. What a horrible perversion, distortion, twisting of the scriptures there. Love begins at home. Now, they say charity begins at home. Love begins at home. What is the commandment? Love God with all your heart, neighbors, the others, as yourself. It begins right there. You can't love the saints. You can't love the church. You can't love the neighbors. You don't show that love at home. First begins there. Well, what are his own? Well, this may reach far. Children, parents, grandparents, uncles, aunts. But his own household has a special and particular meaning. He who does not provide for his own, especially for those of his own household. Now, the direct reference here in the context is the children's care for the parents. The children, that is, those who were once provided for, are now to provide for those who once provided for them. That's their parents. That's what he says here. That's the first thing in the consideration. The young for the old. What a great importance that's placed upon this responsibility. Shame on you when your parents, those who cared for you and labored, brought you into this world and sheltered and protected you, when they get old, they're in your way because you're just in the prime of life then. You're just beginning to make some money, you're really getting yourself, and you and your friends or your wife or whatever, you got your own thing going. Here it is, Mom and Daddy wants to mess up our lives for us, but we got to be bound down to taking care of them. That is. And yet society has accommodated that and said, well, if you'll vote for me, I'll take your Mom and Daddy off your hands. They won't have to eat dog food anymore. We'll take care of them. Get them out of your hair. Notice how contemptible this mentality is placed in this particular scriptures. Now, if he's put that sort of emphasis there, how much more husband's responsibility to care for his wife and his children? In fact, he says, whoever neglects to do that has denied the Christian faith. Stay with me now, folks. Now, what does it mean when he says he's denied the faith? Obviously, there is no theology, no doctrinal heresy here. He may be straight-laced theologian. He may give a correct, orthodox answers to every theological question you could give him concerning what the Christian faith believes. But he's denied it. Why? He's denied it in his life. He doesn't live it. And because he doesn't live it, he doesn't believe it. It's not his faith. He is devoid of Christian graces. He doesn't have them. What is wrong with him? He is lazy and dear folks, I know these are ugly words, but there is no escaping the person who refuses, who will not provide for his own. He's lazy and he is greedy. He's a hard worker, but he wants it all for himself. He is selfish. He can't be bothered and distracted with looking after those folks. He's got his own life he wants to live and have fun with. He's carnal. He is without sacrificial love. He does not have the spirit of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Now hear this. In the most savage, beastly, uncivilized, and reprobate of societies, I'm talking about primitive ones, in those, the most savage, the most beastly, the most depraved of societies, you know how things are? Well, let me tell you. And I can prove it, I can demonstrate it to it. Women and children do all the work. Men hunt and fish, drink and play, and loaf. That's the way the American Indians did it. That's the way people still do it back in the jungles. Old people, when they get old, they're put out to die. Can't be bothered with them. That is in the darkest of men's minds. That's the way things go when they get darker. Christianity is the only thing that brought civilization to this world. And reverse that whole thing. He is worse than an infidel. That's what he says. He's worse. Civilized unbelievers. People who are not believers in the Christian faith, you listening? They're not Christians. They cannot say, yes, I believe that. I will accept that for my rule of life. Yet, they have been influenced by this truth. Many people who are not Christian don't realize how Christian you are in your action because you have absorbed and benefited by the Christian civilization in which you live. And where does it come from? It comes from God, no place else. Civilized, unbelievers, yet have common graces, pride, responsibilities, and natural affection. How utterly decadent and depraved then is this religious professor. He claims to be a Christian who is without decent natural affection, social or moral conscience. How odious, how contemptible is such a person, worse than an infidel. That's the Bible's word, not mine. Now the provider is normally a man. I've used this term husband, father. That is normally so. God has arranged it. You notice they got bigger muscles, that they have different constitutions, they think differently. They're more suited to face the world, to kill bears and lions and Philistines. They're better suited to do that. Nevertheless, sometimes it is necessary they be a woman. And no disgrace or dishonor or nothing unbiblical in that. It has to be that way sometimes. Sometimes it has to be a child, a sibling, a son. Sometimes even a daughter or a grandchild or a niece or a nephew that becomes the provider. And the final spiritual principle that's given to us in this passage today, and this I'm giving the least time to, I've already worn you out, And I will just put this out here for you to meditate and think on, and it's big, because we started off with it. It's those, that passage, that puzzling passage from verses 9 through 15. The great spiritual resources, asset that the church has in godly persons who are unencumbered by provider obligations, commercial employments, and or financial responsibilities. Let me repeat that for you. Here is a pool of enormous, wonderful, marvelous resources that the church has in godly persons who are unencumbered by providers' obligations, commercial employment, or family responsibilities. I want you to notice how devoutly these widows had to be given to their work. Let me read to you here. Verse 11 says these younger widows couldn't be accepted because after they have enrolled and become a part of this work and committed themselves to this work and this ministry, that's why they get to thinking, you know, I believe I'd like to get out of this and get married. He puts it in such a way that says they have turned against Christ. They've cast off their first commitment, their faith. Now, you understand, dear friend, that it's Paul says younger widows ought to marry. To get married is not against Christ, but they have given themselves to this work. And now they said, you know, I don't love this work much. I love that man, and I'd rather be a wife and a mother rather than do that. And that's all right to be a wife and a mother. But this particular work has so captured their hearts and soul that it becomes their life. It's better for them not even start. You're not going to make it. Go ahead and get married and raise children. But these have given themselves to that work. See that? And that's what he means there. It doesn't mean that they've cast off their faith, they've gone after the devil. It means that the devil has succeeded in distracting them from this singularity, this marvelous thing that they have given themselves to. Who are some of these groups? Well, I'll just mention them, and then we'll be through. Older widows. Those for whom the prospects of marriage and childbearing and childrearing is past. And so many people at the time come to this place and say, you know, there's nothing for me to do anymore. I don't have any purpose on this earth. I'm not, you know, no. There may be opportunities. You that are greatest you have ever had in your life that no one else can have. Victims of desertion and divorce, both men and women. Older, retired men. Some of them are finding some of those things, and you can. Unemployable persons who from the beginning do not have the capacity to be employed by the world. Oh, God has something wonderful to engage you in. Those whose gift is not to marry. And Paul takes this up extensively in the 7th chapter of 1 Corinthians. We read a small part of it. That is not their gift to marry. Thereby, they're unencumbered with home responsibilities. And Paul says they're free to serve the Lord in a far more thorough and effective way. Told that if anyone would give themselves to this work, to this labor, to this employment of God and the church, they have to prove it. Their heart and their soul is in it. How do you prove it? Well, here's he says in verse 10. Well reported out for good works. Your prospect for this? Brought up children, did her part there. You were faithful to that which you were given to do at the time you were given to do it. If you can't do it anymore, no more kids for you to raise. You brought up children. She has lodged strangers. She's been hospitable. She's washed the saints' feet. She's served the church faithfully. She's relieved the afflicted. She has diligently followed every good work. What a wonderful aspiration to have that as our record, the family, Lord. Let's stand.